Coriolanus thought about what it had felt like to be in the arena, where there were no rules, no laws, no consequences to one's actions. The needle of his moral compass had swung madly without direction. Fueled by the terror of being prey, how quickly he himself had become a predator, with no reservations about smashing Bobbin to death. He'd transformed, all right, but not into anything he was proud of. And being a Snow, he had more self-control than most. He tried to imagine what it would be like if the whole world played by those same rules. No consequences. People taking what they wanted, when they wanted, and killing for it if it came to that. Survival driving everything. There had been days during the war when they'd all been too scared to leave the apartment. Days when the lawlessness had made even the capital an arena. Yes, the lack of law, that was at the heart of it. So people needed to agree on laws to follow. Was that what Dr. Gall had meant by social contract? The agreement not to rob, abuse, or kill one another? It had to be. And the law required enforcement, and that was where control came in. Without the control to enforce the contract, chaos reigned. The power that controlled needed to be greater than the people. Otherwise, they would challenge it. The only entity capable of this was the capital. It took him until about 2 in the morning to sort that out, and then it barely filled a page. Dr. Gall would want more, but that was all he could manage tonight. He crawled into bed, where he dreamed of Lucy Gray being hunted by the rainbow snakes. He awoke with a start, trembling to the strains of the anthem. "You have got to hold yourself together," he told himself. "The games can't last much longer." The breakfast delights provided by Mrs. Plinth gave him a boost into day 4 of the Hunger Games. On the trolley, he gorged himself on a slice of blackberry pie, a sausage roll, and a cheese tart. Between the games and the plinths, his waistband was becoming snug. He would make an effort to walk home. Velvet ropes cordoned off the section of the dais with the 8 remaining mentors, and now a sign with the occupant's name hung on the back of each chair. Assigned seating. That was new, but probably an attempt to mitigate some of the snarkiness that had sprung up in the last few days. Coriolanus remained in the back row between Io and Urban. Poor Festus was sandwiched between Vipsania and Clemencia. Lucky welcomed the audience with the long-suffering Jubilee, who'd been confined in a cage more suited to a rabbit than a bird. Nothing stirred in the arena, and the tribute seemed to be sleeping in. The only new development was that someone, likely Reaper, had dragged Jessup's body to the line of the dead near the barricade. Coriolanus nervously awaited the announcement of Gaius Breen's death, but no word was forthcoming. The game makers spent time with the crowd in front of the arena, which continued to expand. The different fan clubs now sported shirts with tribute and mentor faces, and Coriolanus felt both pleased and embarrassed to see his image staring back at him from the giant screen. Not until mid-morning did the first tribute make an appearance, and it took the audience a moment to place her. "It's Wovi!" Hilarius shouted in relief. "She's alive!" Coriolanus remembered the child as scrawny, but now she looked skeletal. Her arms and legs like sticks, her cheeks sunken. She crouched at the mouth of a tunnel in her filthy striped dress, squinting into the sunlight and clutching an empty water bottle. "Hold on, Wovi! Food's on the way!" said Hilarius, hammering away at his cuff. She couldn't have much in the way of sponsors, but there was always someone willing to place a bet on a long shot. Lepidus swooped in, and Hilarius spoke at length about Wovi's merits. He presented her absence as stealth, claiming it had been their strategy all along for her to hide and let the field clear. "And look at her! Here she is in the final 8. As a half-dozen drones sped across the arena toward her, Hilarius became even more excited. "There's her food and water now. All she has to do is grab it and get back in hiding." As the supplies showered her, Wovi lifted her hands but seemed in a daze. She pawed at the ground, located a bottle of water, and struggled to unscrew the cap. After a few gulps, she sank back against the wall and gave a small belch. A thin stream of silverish liquid trickled out of the side of her mouth, and then she went still. The audience watched uncomprehendingly for a minute.
"She's dead," announced Urban.
"No, no, she's not dead. She's just resting," said Hilarius. But the longer Wovi stared unblinkingly into the bright sunlight, the harder that was to believe. Coriolanus examined her spittle, neither clear nor bloody, but slightly off, and wondered if Lucy Gray had finally managed to put the rat poison to use. It would have been easy to poison the last swallow of water in a bottle and discard it in one of the tunnels. Desperate Wovi would not have thought twice about downing it. But no one else, not even Hilarius, seemed to find anything amiss.
"I don't know," said Lepidus to Hilarius. "I think your friend might be right."
They waited another 10 long minutes without a flicker of life from Wovi before Hilarius gave in and lifted his chair. Lepidus heaped on the praise, and Hilarius, while disappointed, reckoned things could have gone a lot worse. She managed to hang in there a long time, given her condition. "I wish she'd have come out sooner so I could have fed her, but I feel like I can hold my head up. The final eight is nothing to sneeze at." Coriolanus mentally checked his list. Both tributes from 3, both from 4, and Treach and Reaper. That was all that stood between Lucy Gray and victory. 6 tributes, and a fair amount of luck. Wovi's death went unnoticed for a while in the arena. It was almost lunchtime when Reaper came out from the barricade, still wearing his flag cape. He approached Wovi warily, but she had posed no threat alive, and she certainly didn't dead. Reaper crouched beside her and picked up an apple, then frowned as he examined her face more closely. "He knows," thought Coriolanus. "He at least suspects that it wasn't a natural death." Reaper dropped the apple, lifted Wovi into his arms, and headed to the dead tributes, abandoning the food and water on the ground. "You see," Clemencia asked no one in particular, "you see what I'm dealing with? My tribute's mentally unbalanced."
"I guess you're right," said Festus. "Sorry about earlier." And that was it.
Wovi's death caused no suspicion outside the arena, and inside it, only Reaper questioned the cause. Lucy Gray was not prone to carelessness. Perhaps she'd even chosen frail Wovi as a target because the child's already grave condition would mask the poisoning. He felt frustrated by his inability to communicate with her and update their strategy together. With so few left, was hiding still the best approach? Or would it be better for her to act more aggressively? Of course, he didn't know. She could be planting poison food and water at this very moment, in which case she'd need more, which he couldn't provide if she didn't make an appearance. Although he didn't believe in it, he tried to channel her telepathically. "Let me help, Lucy Gray. Or at least let me see that you're all right," he thought. Then added, "I miss you." Reaper had returned to the tunnels by the time District 4 scavenged Wovi's food. Their absolute lack of concern with its origin reassured Coriolanus that the possibility of poisoning had flown under the radar. They sat right down where Wovi died and gobbled up every bite. Then they strolled back to their tunnel. Mizzen walked with a limp, but he would still outmatch most of the remaining tributes if it came to a fight. Coriolanus wondered if in the end it would all come down to Coral and Mizzen deciding which District 4 tribute took home the crown. In all his years, Coriolanus had never left a school lunch unfinished, but the cardboard bowls of lima beans on noodles turned his stomach. Still full from the plinth's breakfast, he just couldn't bring himself to swallow even a spoonful, and it required a quick exchange of his untouched bowl with Festus's empty one to avoid a reprimand. "Here, lima beans still taste like the war to me."
"That's me and oatmeal. One whiff and I want to hide in a bunker," said Festus, who made quick work of the stuff. "Thanks. I overslept and missed breakfast.
Coriolanus hoped the lima beans hadn't been a bad omen. Then he admonished himself. This was no time to start embracing superstitions. He needed to keep his wits sharp, stay personable for the cameras, and get through the day. Lucy Gray must be getting hungry by now. He planned his next food delivery while he sipped his water. With Hilarius gone, the three remaining mentor chairs in the back row had been centered, and Coriolanus resumed his seat in the middle. It was, as Domitia had called it, like a game of musical chairs, and these were the very people he'd played with during childhood. If he ever had children, and he planned to one day, would they still be among the elite capital social club? Or would they be relegated to lesser circles? It would help if they had a wider family network to draw on, but he and Tigris were the only Snows of their generation. Without her, he'd be headed into the future all alone. Little occurred in the arena that afternoon. Coriolanus watched for Lucy Gray, hoping for a chance to feed her, but she remained elusive. The audience outside the arena provided most of the excitement when Coral fans mixed it up with Treach fans over who was worthiest to be crowned victor. A few punches were thrown before the peacekeeper separated the two groups, sending them to opposite sides of the crowd. Coriolanus felt glad his own fans had a little more class. In late afternoon, when Lucky resumed his coverage, Dr. Gall sat across from him holding Jubilee in his cage. The bird rocked back and forth like a small child trying to comfort itself. Lucky eyed his pet with worry, perhaps anticipating its loss to the labs.
"We have a special guest with us today, head game maker Dr. Gall, who's been making friends with Jubilee. I hear you have some sad news for us, Dr. Gall."
Dr. Gall moved Jubilee's cage to the table.
"Yes. Due to injuries sustained in the rebel bombing of the arena, another of our academy students, Gaius Breen, has died."
As his classmates cried out, Coriolanus tried to center himself. Any minute he might be called upon to respond to Gaius's death, but that wasn't the source of his anxiety. Gaius would be easy enough to eulogize. He hadn't an enemy in the world.
"I think I speak for everyone when I say we extend our sympathies to the family," said Lucky.
Dr. Gall's face hardened.
"We do. But actions speak louder than words, and our rebel enemies seem somewhat hard of hearing. In response, we've planned something special for their children in the arena."
"Shall we tune in?" said Lucky.
In the center of the arena, Tesley and Cirque squatted over a pile of rubble, poking around for who knew what. Apparently, they held no interest for Reaper, who sat high in the stands, his back to the arena wall, wrapped in his cape. Suddenly, Treach burst out of a tunnel and bore down on the District 3 tributes, who fled for the barricade. Murmurs of confusion came from the audience. Where was the "something special" promised by Dr. Gall? They were answered by the sight of an oversized drone flying into the arena, transporting the rainbow snake tank. Coriolanus had all but convinced himself that the snake attack had been a product of an overheated imagination, but the entry of the tank ended that. His brain had assembled the puzzle pieces in exactly the right order. What he didn't know was how the snakes would respond to being unleashed, but he'd been in the lab. Dr. Gall did not breed lapdogs. She designed weapons. The unusual package caught Treach's attention. Perhaps he thought some extra special gift had been earmarked for him, because he halted as the drone reached the middle of the arena. Tesley and Cirque paused as well, and even Reaper rose to observe the delivery. The drone released the uncovered tank about 10 yards above the ground. Rather than shattering, the container bounced on impact. Then, like a flower opening its petals, its walls fell to the ground. Snakes shot out in all directions, creating a multicolored sunburst in the dust. In the front row, Clemencia jumped to her feet and let out a blood-curdling scream, almost causing Festus to fall out of his chair. As most people were only just registering the new development on the screen, her reaction seemed extreme. Afraid that Clemencia would spill the whole story in her panic, Coriolanus leaped up and wrapped his arms around her from behind, not sure if the move was meant to be comforting or confining. Clemencia went rigid but silent. "They're not here. They're in the arena," Coriolanus said in her ear. "You're safe." But he continued to hold on to her as the action unfolded. Maybe Treach's Lumber District background had given him some familiarity with snakes. The second they erupted from the tank, he turned on his heel and sprinted for the stands. He bounced up the debris hill like a goat and kept moving, hurtling over seats as he ascended. The few moments of confusion that Tessely and Cirque experienced came at a great cost. Tessely made it to one of the poles and managed to shinny up a few yards to safety, but Cirque stumbled over a rusty old spear and the snakes overtook him. A dozen pairs of fangs pierced his body, and then, as if satisfied, the snakes moved on. Pink, yellow, and blue streaked his body as the wounds pumped out bright pus. Smaller than Clemencia, with double the venom in his system, Cirque struggled to breathe for about 10 seconds before he died. Tessely stared at his fallen body and sobbed in terror as she clung to the pole. Below her, the delicate snakes bunched, rearing up and dancing around the base. Lucky's voiceover boomed above the scene. "What's happening?"
"These are mutations we've developed in our labs in the capital," Dr. Gall informed the audience. "They're only snakelets, but full grown, they'll easily outrun a human, and that post will be no problem for them to climb. They're designed to hunt humans and reproduce rapidly, so any casualties can be swiftly replaced."
By this time, Treach had climbed out onto the narrow shelf over the scoreboard, and Reaper had found refuge on the roof of the press box. The few snakes that had managed to scale the rubble into the stands gathered below them. The mics picked up the muted sounds of a girl's scream.
"They got Lucy Gray," Coriolanus thought in despair. "The handkerchief didn't work."
But just then, Mizzen exploded from the tunnel nearest the barricade, followed by a shrieking choral. A single snake dangled from her arm. She tore it free, but dozens charged for her the moment it hit the ground, targeting her lower legs. Mizzen flung away his trident and made a flying leap to gain the pole across from Tessely. Despite his bad knee, he halved his previous time climbing to the top. From there, he witnessed Coral's frantic but blissfully short end. With the targets on the ground disposed of, most of the snakes regrouped under Tessely. Her grip on the pole began to fail, and she cried out to Mizzen for help, but he only shook his head, more stunned than malicious. People in the audience began shushing each other then, although Coriolanus did not know why. As the hall quieted, he picked up on what sharper ears had detected. Somewhere, ever so faintly, someone was singing in the arena. His girl. Lucy Gray emerged from her tunnel, moving in slow motion and backward. She lifted each foot with care as she stepped behind herself, swaying gently to the rhythm of her music.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
That was the extent of the lyrics at the moment, but it was compelling nonetheless. Following her, as if mesmerized by the melody, came half a dozen snakes. Coriolanus released Clemencia, who had calmed down, giving her a gentle push in Festus's direction. He stepped toward the screen, holding his breath as Lucy Gray continued to back in and then curve around toward where Jessup's body had lain. Her voice became louder as she, knowingly or not, worked her way back to the mic. Perhaps for one last song, one last performance. None of the snakes were inclined to attack her, though. In fact, she seemed to be drawing them from around the arena. The bunch under Tessley's pole thinned, a few dropped from the stands, and dozens slithered out of the tunnels to join in a general migration to Lucy Gray. They surrounded her, flocking in from all sides, making it impossible for her to continue retreating. The bright bodies undulated over her bare feet, curling around her ankles as she lowered herself gently onto a chunk of marble. With the tips of her fingers, she spread her ruffles out in the dust, as if by way of invitation. As the snake swarmed her, the faded fabric vanished, leaving her with a brilliant skirt of weaving reptiles.